was Velus Jones making the roster as big of an upset as we saw on cutdown day? Do highly drafted players usually get 3 years, or was it more about speed than draft status?
It's a good question. I find it interesting. I think Velus Jones Jr. has struggled a little bit in his career, and he's an older player. What is he, 27 now? So we should see the best of him. It's his third year. You draft a guy, you bring him in, and you do see flashes. You saw some flashes of him as a running back after they moved him there. I don't know about what position he has on the field. I just don't know that that you're going to see a lot of him other than returning kicks. And I think this speaks to the value of the kickoff return. And, you know, Velus is a fairly big guy. He's about 6 feet tall. And he's got some, he's obviously a speedster, and that's why you're keeping him. But I guess the question would be, if he were a sixth round pick, would you keep him? If he weren't the first player that you took, offense player that you took as a general manager, Ryan Poles, would you be keeping him? I think that, I think his speed separates him, and I think they're going to give him the third year. You know, they saw something that they felt they could take advantage of, so you give him another opportunity. But if he ends up being, you know, on the bench all year, it'll be upsetting because you're kind of wasting a roster spot. But I totally understand that, that it's not just the draft status. It's the profile of the player. It's the size-speed combination that that can get you something out of a kickoff return. It's a pity he can't return punts. It's a pity you can't trust him to do that, and he can't be kind of a guy that you value on special teams for that reason. But that's just the reality of what it is. So see what he can do, see what the new position looks like, and move on.
I think he really needed that game in Kansas City the other night to make it. And I think the combination of what happened to Wheeler in that game also, I thought it was very interesting. We're going to talk about Hard Knocks at some point. But they were going over, you guys mentioned this in the first segment, they were going over the roster. All the coaches are in a big meeting room. And Poles asked the running backs coach, who's your third guy in that room? Who's your third guy in that room? We never got an answer. And then we went into the hole. And he's not even the third guy. Him and Wheeler would be the fourth guy.
Yep.
But we didn't hear who the third guy was, which I thought was interesting that they cut that out. I really found that interesting. But, you know, speed also part of Hard Knocks. You know, Eberflus giving the running backs coach a hard time a little bit, get poking, you know, oh, that was all coaching.
Great
right
coaching,
there.
Yeah.
Great coaching. You knocked it out of the park,
that's
right?
Hilarious.
And they had a good laugh, right? But again, it's one of those things. It's like offensive linemen in high school, right? You can't teach 6'6, 290. Okay? You can't teach 4.3, 4.28 speed.
Can't
so
coach that.
You can't coach that. So when you get that, you try to take that and you try to mold it and make the player you want out of it.
That's why I never thought he was in danger of losing his roster spot, regardless of the attention and the scrutiny and, that he gets because of what he hasn't done and the mistakes that he's made in his first two seasons are high profile. They've been costly. But he's going to get another opportunity because the oldest adage in football is that speed kills. And you have it with Velus Jones. And with Shane Waldron, you have an offensive coordinator who's going to have a fresh set of eyes, a fresh start with every player. And if there's a way that they can incorporate Velus Jones into an offense 4 to 6 times a game and get him on the field in that hybrid role and isolate a mismatch on a strong safety or a linebacker, you're going to maybe do that. He's not going to get the ball instead of the top three receivers on this roster. He's not going to carry the ball out of the backfield when you have DeAndre Swift and Khalil Herbert. What about Roschon Johnson? He might be your third guy. So I don't think that you're talking about Velus Jones taking carries or receptions away from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But he might give you an opportunity to exploit a mismatch if you're skilled enough or savvy enough to design a play to do that against a certain team and a certain defense. I don't know if they're able to do that, but that's why he's here. He did play his way onto the roster. He is getting older, but he does have draft status protection. That also is maybe not the oldest adage in the NFL, but it certainly is true with every organization. General managers who draft players give them preferential treatment when it comes to cutdown day.
Yeah.
Look at Noah Sewell. Why is he still on the roster? He was drafted by Ryan Poles. He did not have a better camp than other linebackers who got cut yesterday. But this is what happens when you are drafted. You are given this kind of favored status, and that explains why Velus Jones is still here.
That and the number 4-3-1 is what he ran at the combine.
Well, your first question was your best question.
Dan Weeder there, 725. He's here with Mully and Haw talking Bears. Were you surprised to see the Bears keep six defensive ends on the final roster? Montez Sweat, DeMarcus Walker, Darrell Taylor, Austin Booker, Dominique Robinson, and Daniel Hardy. They also put Jacob Martin on short-term IR with a toe. That means he could return before Week 5 kicks off.
I think that if I were Dominique Robinson and Daniel Hardy, I would have maybe a more tepid celebration than the other guys because their status on this roster, it would be fluid. I don't know that they're going to be here for the long haul. It reflects, number one, a need position. The biggest need position. The defensive end opposite Montez Sweat was a position that we spent the most time wondering about. And certainly probably when Ryan Poles is sitting there in those pensive moments and thinking as he contemplates the roster, he's like, who am I going to get to rush the passer opposite Tez? And those guys are candidates. Daniel Hardy played his way on the roster. I don't know if there's another example on the 53-man roster this morning of a guy who played his way onto the roster more than Daniel Hardy. So congratulations to him, and he will be somebody to keep an eye on. But I think what happens with the long snapper position with, you know, Cameron Lyons, what happens with that guy, who's going to be tried out, and who's going to be snapping the ball to Torrey Taylor, and who's going to be snapping the ball on PATs and field goals, that may affect how many defensive ends end up being on the roster and in the mix. As for Jacob Martin, they have time. They have until Week 5 to figure out exactly how badly they need him. It's conceivable that they could have him healthy. He could come back and there won't be a need. Somebody will have emerged. I hope it's, frankly, Austin Booker, but they do have plenty of other candidates.
Well, part of the answer to this question is about what you guys just talked about with Velus Jones Jr. I mean, Dominique Robinson might still be on this roster because of where he was drafted. Right. And Dominique Robinson might be the guy that is not cut first from this group when they sign. You know, is the long snapper going to take the defensive end or is he going to take an offensive lineman spot? Because you've got 10 offensive linemen is ridiculous, but that's not the question right now. I really liked what I've seen from Daniel Hardy, that he's looked really good, like that story. So that's the guy that I'm personally pulling for.
It's a lot of defensive ends, and David's absolutely right. The biggest question is who's opposite Montez Sweat, and I think we know that DeMarcus Walker is going to be that guy, but he's also a guy that can move inside, and he's kind of an inside pass rusher when they get to that. So it's listen, they got one guy too many. That's the reality of life. They just have one guy too many, and they also have a guy who's injured who's probably better than the one guy too many. So, you know, don't be stunned if they end up moving a couple of these guys to the practice squad. But they obviously value them. They obviously really like them. You know, you can play around with this roster, and you can sign yourself a long snapper and really not activate him until game day, and you can manipulate and change things and move guys around on and off the practice squad. But yeah, it just seems like there's one too many. I mean, I'm just being honest about it. And, you know, we should talk about the offensive line too, but yeah, the answer to the question, I was surprised that they kept six defensive ends, but I'm not sure that that's a long-term issue.
There's a lot of questions there.
What was the best bit of injury news for the Bears? That offensive tackle Larry Borum out with an ankle injury, put on IR with the designation to return, meaning his injury is not serious enough to be season ending. Or is it that Ryan Bates, sidelined with a shoulder injury, will not be on the IR? Were you surprised that Ross Tucker told us that he's covered Bates since high school back in the Philadelphia area and said he never saw him snap the ball as a center?
I don't know why we didn't talk about that sooner. That blew my mind a little bit because they signed him as a center. I mean, I know they have a center, but he's on a one-year deal, and this is supposed to be your center and your center of the future. You just don't want to see them go through the same thing they went through with Cody Whitehair, where you move a guy to a position and he's not as good as he was at the other position. And, you know, you just worry about that. I find it hard to believe that he never snapped in high school. Didn't he say that they won the state title like three times or something, covered those games and never saw him snap? It's just interesting to me that they believe him to be a center. I don't know. He gives you a lot of cover. I think he's a pretty good player, but that's the better news. If he doesn't go on IR, that's the better news. That means that his shoulder injury isn't a four-week injury, and that's a big deal.
Yeah, he also got a little 10 seconds on Hard Knocks last night. Thought that was interesting. Yeah, I mean, surprised a little bit. I mean, is Ryan Bates all of a sudden going to, like, snap out of it, pun intended, and be ready for the Titans out of nowhere? And would that work that quickly? Would he and Caleb Williams be on the same page at that point? I mean, they've been in love with this guy. They've been chasing – Ryan Poles has been chasing this guy also, right? He's been after – so this guy's not going anywhere anytime soon because Ryan Poles can't be wrong on this guy. They've been chasing this guy for a long time.
Yeah, I would – high school career in Philadelphia.
I would hope that they wouldn't mess around with it right now. Coleman Shelton has – I don't know if he's won the job or he's just been capable enough to keep the job, but he is on the job, and you don't want to have experiments in week one. So regardless of how long Ryan Poles has been enamored with Ryan Bates, I don't know that you want to play around and tinker with your week one offensive line, not when you've had a training camp full of continuity. And they have had that. And the one thing you can guarantee, though, in any NFL season is that you're going to have a regular season full of attrition.
Yep.
So Ryan Bates offers you cover, whether it's Nate Davis or Tevin Jenkins or maybe Coleman Shelton. But I don't think you want to tinker when you're talking about a rookie quarterback who has mastered to this point the operation. Those are the things, the little things that we talked about coming into training camp. When you have the same center for a month, and my sense is that Caleb Williams has worked with Coleman Shelton longer than anybody, you want to lean into that comfort zone for your quarterback's sake. So that, to me, trumps anything that happened before in terms of Ryan Bates being pursued by Ryan Poles. And I think when you talk about Bates making the team, it's good news because it appears he will be healthy, and they don't think he's going to be out for or unavailable for the four-week window there. And if he is, I think he's more right now a depth piece. And then depending on how Nate Davis performs, you have options there, but I wouldn't tinker with the center.
It's a good question.
All right, that's the voice of Chris Chelios. He's talking Chicago sports at 844. So how do you think the Cubs will fare today against Mr. David's favorite starter in the whole wide world, Paul Skeens? Will they flail wildly at fastballs and look silly, or make Skeens look like a rookie and put a smile on my face?
Well, the Cubs had a big win last night. That was a big one. Dansby Swanson with his mom on her birthday in the stands, him acknowledging her. That was a lot of fun. He homers, third homer in eight games for Dansby, so he's hot. The Cubs over 500 for the first time since May 28th. They have an opportunity today to sweep the Pirates. It won't be easy. Mr. Skeens means business. He's going to be on the mound throwing BBs, 100 miles per hour. How many strikeouts will he have? But he's not going nine. He'll only go seven, and he'll probably leave with a 2-1 lead. The Cubs, because Dansby Swanson is hot, because PCA is hot, because Miguel Amaya is scorching hot. You see, he's the first Cub catcher to have five multiple hit games in a row since 1996. Who's Tyler Houston, Dustin? Do you remember that guy? He was a catcher for the Cubs. I didn't recall the name. Stop ringing the bell. I'm still raving about the Cubs. They won. They're over 500. They're back. They win today.
Wow.
They win today?
They win today. They come back.
The headline's the last sentence.
Right? Yes. I just wanted to make sure I heard that right. So
Skeens leaves with a 2-1 lead, but the Cubs rally in the ninth.
With 9 runs?
Not 9.
Oh.
3-2 Cubs.
So you'll agree with he's just a man. He puts his pants on the same way you do? Right? Does one leg at a time?
No, he's a man, but he throws
BBs.
He's
not a machine. He's a man.
He's going to look like a machine.
He's a man, babe.
Tell that to the Cubs. We're going to strike out 8 times today against that guy.
So they're going to strike out 8 times. Somehow they're going to get 1 run against him. I mean, you're kind of flip-flopping as we keep talking about it. Which way are we going here? Okay, so the Cubs are going to sweep, but not because Paul Skeens.
Right. You know. Right.
I mean, you know, again, he's a man. He's a man. He's not a machine. He's good. You heard Ian Happ yesterday. They got a little book on him. They got a little tape on him now. Okay? He can be touched. He can be touched. He's not the best pitcher that's ever had the ball in his hands. He's really good. He's really good. He's not the best. Cubs are not going to strike out more than 6 times against him today. How about that? Take that.
Yeah, he came into Wrigley Field on May 17th, and he threw 6 innings, didn't allow a hit. He struck out 11. So I'm just saying, he's now they got tape on him, so they're not going to strike out anymore. Is that Dustin's theory?
That's what I said.
Okay. Listen, the bats are alive, and that's great. And we saw them score a ton of runs and then score way more than usual runs, and now they got to get runs against a better player. I think they can win the game. I just don't think they're going to win it while Skeens is in it. So let him get his 6 or 7 innings and then come back and score 3 or 4 runs and win the game 4-2. Sounds good to
me. I like 4-2. I can do 4-2.
4-2 will work for me.
Yeah, that would work. I think late rallies are good.
So to your point, David, the Cubs are actually favored in this one. They're -142. The total's 8. This, of course, off of Circus Sports Illinois. I'm looking around still to find a total number for Skeens strikeouts. Yeah. I'm looking for that next.
He's going to strike out 8 Cubs.
He's going to strike out. I was going to say 9, but that's 8-9. I think we're on the same page. They're going to win 3-2, 4-2, whatever.
Okay, next question.
All right, guys. Any idea why the White Sox started that game last night? It went all of 4 pitches with Garrett Crochet throwing the 4 pitches.
Well, no. Honest to God, I mean, if you looked at the shots they were taking from the press box, some of the guys covering the game, the storm was literally coming. It was like descending upon the park. It was almost like there was a tornado funnel that was just going to land on the pitcher's mound. I couldn't believe that they started that game. I couldn't believe it ended before they started it. What was that? Why? I don't get it. You want to sell some milkshakes? I'm not sure I follow. It was weird. It was a strange decision. They're usually all over this stuff. This must have been like a huge surprise. The Sox are usually on it when it comes to calling a game or understanding when rain is on the way, etc. But, man, that was bad.
All right, so just real quick. Paul Skeens over 6.5 strikeouts.
Over.
Is -136.
Okay.
How about this for a fun one? Okay. You want a fun bet? You guys like velocity, right? A lot of velocity. You can bet Paul Skeens' velocity on the first pitch today, August 28th. If you believe the first pitch will go at 101 or over, +2,000. +2,000. No? Not taking that bet, David?
98.
Okay, so under 99 miles an hour is -290, meaning you have to bet $290 to win $100. All right, so to answer the question, I mean, the pictures of Roger Bosser, like, oh my goodness gracious, what is going on? He actually ran out there and was helping the guys push the tarp, right? It was that crazy. I don't get it. And you guys mentioned in the first segment, that would be an unbelievable way if that's the last time we see Garrett Crochet. And even Bob Nightingale sent out a tweet saying, this is just so White Sox. You have your ace. You have your ace. And he's not going to pitch. He's not going to come back today, which I don't understand why. But, okay, he's not going to come back today, supposedly. And now you have a chance to snap the losing streak, and you let him go out there with the rain coming and throw 4 pitches. It's so White Sox.
You can't possibly throw him out there today.
Why?
Because if you did and something happened to his arm, the irregularity with which you're treating this, you could be blamed forever for ruining his career.
So did he go, in all seriousness, did he go behind the scenes and like throw a sim game?
He warmed up.
No, he warmed up already, threw four pitches, called it a night.
But that couldn't screw him up? To not continue the game?
No, probably not, because he's not putting any wear and tear in his arm.
Well, you just
arm.
Said irregularity. It's very irregular to warm up and throw four pitches and have your night end.
But you're not straining your arm anymore. Today would be straining your arm if you go out again. You're not straining your arm by doing nothing. Doing nothing is not going to get you
so
hurt.
So he's not a machine either. He's a man.
He's not a machine.
Okay.
Paul Skeens is a machine.
Could Paul Skeens throw four pitches and then come back the next day?
No, you wouldn't do that with anybody. You wouldn't do that with Drew Smiley. You wouldn't do that with anybody.
Picking on a guy who's out of work.
Now you're being silly. He's not out of work yet. He's still in the dugout. I don't know if you're paying attention, Dustin. Start paying attention. So I feel bad for Roger Bostard, oddly, because I think that the White Sox on their website has the explanation. Unexpected storms were the main culprit for the start of the quick delay, according to the White Sox.
It kind of dings him a little bit, right? Roger Bostard, he's very rarely wrong. Right, I'm just saying. But now he was wrong with like two exclamation points wrong.
Is he the Tom Skilling of groundskeepers, or is Tom Skilling the Roger Bostard of weathercasters?
Listen.
I don't know.
This season is now a complete disaster because even Roger Bostard got caught up in it.
Who can you trust anymore on the South Side?
They hung an L on Roger Bostard.
The sod father. I feel bad for the sod father. Great guy. Great job.
Great man.
Last night, I think it's just a quirk. Mother Nature hates the White Sox.
Undefeated, even. Right? Mother Nature undefeated?
I thought that was time.
Father time, also undefeated.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
With college football talk heating up this week, you heard it during transition yesterday, hot, 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 and Illinois opening tomorrow night, then Northwestern and Notre Dame starting on Saturday. What are you most looking forward to, or is it too early and too crowded on the sports calendar to even care?
It's never too early to start caring about college football. I got fired up talking to David Braun on Football Night in Chicago. He's talking about finding an edge and talking about an identity and playing in a way. I just love that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I love college football. Illinois opens on Thursday night against Eastern Illinois. They better win that game. Northwestern has Miami of Ohio at the temporary makeshift Lakefront Stadium. They better win that game, even though Miami's tough. They're coming in hot. They're defending MAC champs. I don't think you underestimate them. And as John Greenberg tweeted out, you're really not a full-fledged Northwestern coach until you have lost to Miami of Ohio. So that's going to be tough for the Wildcats. I hope they win with both their quarterbacks playing. But the biggie, I know it's only Wednesday, but Notre Dame and Texas A&M down in College Station, Texas, on the field in front of the press box that sways because the fans are so into this. It is a crazy atmosphere. I've loved covering a couple games down there. I can't wait for that one Saturday night. And I think Notre Dame is going to...
Ooh.
I think they're going to win on the road. They're Holy overrated cow. At number 7, but I think they pull off the road victory against the Aggies.
That's bold.
So it's $65 is the cheapest ticket I'm seeing. But I'm curious. Molly, have you walked down to see that new temporary Northwestern Stadium yet? Can you get close enough?
I have not.
You talked about riding your bike in that area and walking.
I used to ride my bike there all the time.
I'm curious to see that in person. It looks really cool.
I don't know how they're going to get people in and out.
Right?
You got one road in and one road out. It's like Green Bay.
I think you should ride your bike there, honestly, or walk.
I think you should walk over and report back on Tuesday.
What if it rains?
Yeah. Well, the problem is...
Unexpectedly.
The problem is I'm probably going to drop my college student off in Boston.
Sorry, I forgot. I forgot about that. Yeah.
I'd love to go to that game.
So Mully and I had a really good conversation about Notre Dame, David, on the way out of here yesterday, and something I picked up reading. Yes, we do read. The 5 expected starters on Saturday night for Notre Dame's offensive line have a combined 6 starts. That's not good.
Yeah.
They have a true freshman starting at left tackle. That's a nasty place to play. Texas A&M is ranked. They do have a lot of money down there. I just, defense travels. Notre Dame's going to be pretty good on defense. This quarterback's supposed to be something special. Maybe he can get them through that. But this offensive line, I don't think they're going to be able to ground it, you know, run the ball down anybody's throat. It's all about the Notre Dame's offensive line against Texas A&M's defensive line. Game's at 6:30. My wife the other day said, oh, we're going to go out to dinner with so-and-so and so-and-so on Saturday night and take the kids. I said, well, that's great, but wherever you guys pick to go, they better have a TV or I'm not going.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand that. I think it's going to be a ton of fun. I'm looking forward to the Notre Dame game. Really want to see USC-LSU. I saw Brian Kelly interviewed, and he did not sound Cajun.
But that's Sunday, really quick, Mully, for those people tuning in. That's this weekend, you get a Saturday, you get Sunday, you even get Monday games.
6:30 at night.
You get some all weekend long.
Yeah, that's but David, when you said that, you know, when you were leading into the game, I thought you were going to go Clemson-Georgia because I think that game is a huge game. This could be the beginning of the get the hell out of here for a certain head coach at Clemson. Maybe I'm just projecting and maybe I don't like that guy, Dabo Swinney, but I think he's going to run into problems this year because he has not embraced the portal. He hasn't gone about the NIL stuff. And I just feel like Georgia is loaded and they're just going to beat the hell out of Clemson. And we're going to, you know, come away from it. I don't think anybody can get eliminated when it's a 12-game playoff or 12 teams, rather, in the playoff. I think there's plenty of time left in the season. But I do think that there's a first cut that happens where, you know, you're going to die by 1,000 cuts. And that's the first one if you lose on the opening game of the season. It's just like what happened at Notre Dame with Georgia Tech beating Florida State. Number 10, were they, Florida State? They were a rated team, and they lost their opener in Dublin. And I think it's fascinating to see how this is going to go and how many teams are playing their best football late and how they're going to get into the playoff, even though we don't expect it. So I think it's a really special season. I'm looking forward to it. All right.
Can't wait.
That is it. That is the Pick Six. We've got the Extra Point next. And it's football related. Football, football, football. Mully and Hahn the Score.
And I know we're down and everybody's throwing dirt on us, but if Clemson's a stock, you better buy all you freaking can buy right now.